solidão me dá.
Hi, this is God. Whenever I'm in Pittsburgh, which is always because I'm omnipresent, I listen to every radio station at the same time, including WRCT.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, you can't say elite U.S. news media aren't on the story of the federal indictment of Robert Menendez, Democratic chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. But articles like the New York Times's "As Menendez's Star Rose, Fears of Corruption Cast a Persistent Shadow" represent media's embrace of a kind of great man of history theme. The story seems to be mostly about the political fortunes of one individual and the huge numbers of less powerful people that have been impacted by those compromised decisions are at best a kind of backdrop. When media try to tighten it, it can get weirder still. That New York Times piece headline included the idea that, quote, "The New Jersey Democrat broke barriers for Latinos, but prosecutors circled for decades before charging him with an explosive new bribery plot," close quote. Come again? If elite media's lesson from the Menendez indictment is that some people overfavor their personal friends and some people like to hoard gold bars, well, that's a storyline that leads nowhere. It calls nothing into question beyond the individual actors themselves. Is that the kind of coverage we need? What does it even have to do with foreign policy? Stephen Zunes is a professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. His most recent book was co-authored with Jacob Mundy. It's called Western Sahara: War, Nationalism, and Conflict Irresolution. It's out now in a revised and updated edition from Syracuse University Press. We will talk with Stephen Zunes about what's at stake in the Menendez indictment, beyond Menendez's political fortunes. But first, a quick look back at some recent press. Listeners may know that the FCC has been ineffectual for some time now because it's been short of full staffing. Big media players torpedoed, with the most scurrilous of means, the nomination of public interest advocate Gigi Sohn. But eventually, Joe Biden's nominee Ana Gomez was sworn in as the fifth commissioner. In the wake of that, FCC Chair Jessica Rosenworcel has now announced that the agency is going to be an active player again. At the National Press Club this week, Rosenworcel said that the FCC will vote on a notice of proposed rulemaking at its next meeting coming up in mid-October, and they're going to center the role of Title II. That's the part of federal communications law that gives the agency the power to even go about overseeing corporate control of the internet, to push against price gouging, anti-privacy moves, access throttling, the whole range of things that make people hate their internet service providers and make the internet a less hospitable arena for activism and organizing. And that's before you even get to whether they're allowed to shut off service during national crises like COVID. The FCC, under the sway of corporations and their lobbyists, abandoned that Title II responsibility years ago under former chair Ajit Pai, appointed by Donald Trump, based mainly on his career as a lawyer for Verizon. With Title II invigorated, the FCC can engage net neutrality rules, those that prevent ISPs from slowing access for those that don't pony up and speeding it along for those that do, all of which machinations we as end users may not even be aware of, but that absolutely affect what we see and know and act on. Net neutrality has always been overwhelmingly supported by the U.S. public. Few people even wonder anymore whether broadband access is a fundamental, like water or electricity, or whether you should lose access if you live in an underserved area, rural or urban. But corporate powers and government enablers have shown that they will work very hard to prevent it. Remember Ajit Pai pretending that the FCC couldn't acknowledge the flood of pro-net neutrality public comments because, well, there was technical sabotage. That turned out to be a brazen lie. Net neutrality, backed by the FCC's Title II authorization, is nothing less than the ability to monitor and regulate hugely powerful companies' control over an essential element of public life. The ability to inform yourself, to communicate, to participate socially and politically. In other words, we should expect pushback, both loud and subtle. We've already seen headlines like the Wall Street Journal suggestion that a newly empowered FCC chair moves to rekindle net neutrality fight between tech and telecom giants. Well, fighting, that sounds bad. And then where are we in a fight between tech and telecom giants? The thing is, there is something very important for all of us at stake here. So look out for coverage that suggests otherwise. And finally, as U.S. citizens were being subjected to media massaging of the history of September 11th, 2001, with familiar stories about how we were all wrong about the reasons to invade Iraq and we were all surprised by the disastrous outcomes, The Economist was working to massage our understanding of September 11th, 1973, when the Chilean government, led by Democratic Socialist Salvador Allende, was overthrown in a violent coup d'etat by U.S.-supported General Augusto Pinochet. In a late August edition, the Smart People magazine told readers that Chile is still haunted by the coup. And in its blurb for social media, they explained how they would like us to feel about that. Quote, "It would be better for Chile if Salvador Allende and Augusto Pinochet became purely historical figures rather than sources of political inspiration, allowing the country to look forward. Clearly, that is still hard." Close quote. Clearly, it would be better for The Economist, the voice of the Anglo-American business class, if Salvador Allende were a purely historical figure, meaning that no one would take political inspiration from his example of trying to use the electoral system to change an exploitative economic system. But as the magazine laments, getting people to accept that the elected president and the dictator who overthrew him are just two sides of the same coin, well, that's still hard, as well it should be. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. Major news media outlets have been putting out numerous stories on the federal indictment of Robert Menendez, Democratic senator from New Jersey and chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Those stories are overwhelmingly on details of the charges of suspect dealings. Interesting, important information, and on the support or lack thereof from other Congress members. Also, undoubtedly meaningful information. The September 27th New York Times explained that, quote, "Mr. Menendez was charged on Friday with using his power as chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee to assist the government of Egypt and businessmen in New Jersey in exchange for bribes that included bars of gold bullion, a Mercedes-Benz convertible, exercise machines, and more than $500,000 in cash," close quote. That sentence says a little more than it says, in that it reflects U.S. media's evident prioritizing of details of the alleged corruption. What did he get? Gold, halal meat, over interest in the impact on human beings who are not Robert Menendez or his wife or her friends or any business people who got cut a sweet deal. Anyone who might be affected by this assistance to the government of Egypt. We are still in the midst of it, of course, but so far anyway, media seem more interested in what the Times called the deepening crisis Mr. Menendez faces than what it means for anybody else. Stephen Zunes is a professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. His most recent book, co-authored with Jacob Mundy, is Western Sahara, War, Nationalism, and Conflict Irresolution, out now in an updated, expanded edition from Syracuse University Press. He joins us now by phone from the Bay Area. Welcome back to Counterspin, Stephen Zunes. Well, I am absolutely going to ask your thoughts about the indictment and its implications, but I wanted to do just a little history first because it hasn't been front and center in current coverage, and that context is important. You wrote back in January of 2021 when Democrats selected Robert Menendez as chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. You wrote that that decision rung alarm bells for advocates of peace, human rights, and international law. So why was that true already then? And were there particular issue areas that drew concern?
There are quite a number. I mean, the brazenness, the jaw-dropping nature of the charges against Senator Menendez, as you noted, are great tabloid fodder. I mean, they're quite extreme. I mean, this is just not the official corruption, legal corruption we see, you know, especially since the Citizens United decision at the Supreme Court of influencing politicians. But this is really old school in terms of the cash, the gold bars, and everything else. And he's had something of a reputation in New Jersey politics for the corruption. I mean, he was indicted some years ago on corruption charges and ended in this trial with a hung jury. But despite this, the Democrats named him chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. But my concern back then, as with a lot of us, was not on the corruption per se, but he is one of the most hawkish, hardline Democrats in the United States Senate. And he was put in the very powerful position of being head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Now, historically, the Democratic heads of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee have actually tried to curb excesses in militarism and excesses in terms of supporting human rights violators and the like. We think back to J. William Fulbright, who was a leading critic, not just of Nixon, but of Lyndon Johnson in terms of the war in Vietnam. We think of Frank Church in the 1970s. Challenging the abuses by the CIA and other intelligence agencies. We think of Claiborne Powell and others. I mean, in terms of checks and balances, which unfortunately they're not a lot in foreign policy, but at least to some degree we could have it through the Senate Foreign Relations Committee when the Democrats had been in charge. But in choosing Menendez, Schumer and the Democrats went in the opposite direction, someone who has been to the right of even these centrist Democratic president. So Menendez was one of only two senators, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer being the other one, to vote against the Iran nuclear agreement. He has attacked Obama from the right in terms of his attempts at normalization of relations with Cuba. This latter is particularly ironic because Menendez has been obsessed with the authoritarianism and human rights abuses under Cuba's communist government, but he has been one of the most vocal supporters of U.S. support for authoritarian right-wing governments with far worse human rights abuses, including that of Egypt. And I think the big thing that the mainstream media is really, missing here is not just that he apparently received bribes from a foreign government, but one that has a particularly nasty human rights record. And even without the apparent illegal activity, why in the hell is the United States supporting this government in the first place? I mean, let's remember that Egypt gets more U.S. foreign aid, more arms and ammunition and security assistance than any country in the world, save for Ukraine and Israel. And the government of Egypt is one of the absolute worst in terms of its human rights abuses. I mean, since Sisi seized power nearly a decade ago, literally thousands of demonstrators have been slaughtered in the streets. There are over 60,000 political prisoners, one of the highest, if not the highest, number of political prisoners anywhere in the world. And these aren't just Islamist radicals or anything else, far from it. You know, many of these people are nonviolent, liberal, secular activists, the very people who led the nonviolent uprising in 2011 against the previous U.S.-backed dictator, Hosni Mubarak. We're talking about torture on an administrative basis, not to mention corruption up the wazoo. I mean, this is a horrific government. And yet, for years, we've had bipartisan support, both in Congress and in successive administrations, for supporting this regime. Now, there has been some growing concerns in some circles, particularly among progressive Democrats, but even among a handful of Republicans and others, about why the hell are we supporting this kind of regime? And Menendez, as head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, while occasionally giving lip service to human rights, has been steadfast in supporting this kind of aid. And indeed, part of this indictment appears to be that in return for some of these lucrative gifts, he worked to lift a hold on $300 million worth of military aid that was being temporarily withheld on human rights grounds. But the problem here, again, is not just the bribes and corruption by Menendez, but the very question that we really need to be asking is, why are we supporting this regime in the first place?
Absolutely. Well, let me just add to that, frankly, because I looked at a headline from September 14th of this year from the New York Times, choosing security over rights, U.S. approves $235 million in Egypt aid. And, you know, it was Secretary of State Blinken overruled congressional restrictions on U.S. military aid tied to Egypt's dismal human rights record. Okay, that's interesting. But then I see another headline. Despite Egypt's dismal human rights record, U.S. restores military aid. And that headline is from 2018, you know. So there's been this kind of, you know, yes, no, but, and it still is added up to millions of dollars of aid.
I mean, this is all too familiar. I mean, some of us can think back to the 1980s when the Reagan administration would claim they were concerned about human rights and were pushing for human rights reforms in various Latin American dictatorships that were promoting death squads and the like. I mean, this is the same kind of thing. But the problem is that a lot of Democrats, even liberal Democrats, who have been willing to raise human rights concerns when Republicans are in the White House, seem to be rather quiet. You know, when there's a Democrat in the White House, so there's this feeling we see, and this is I certainly find this in online discussions and elsewhere, that much of the criticism about the Biden administration from the right is so silly and outrageous, and given the very real threat of authoritarianism from the Republicans, people are so reluctant to say anything negative about Biden that you know, much of the left liberal wing of the spectrum of this country seems to be ignoring the kinds of abuses that would have mobilized people were they being supported by Republicans. And again, it's not just Egypt, and this is really important. Menendez, you know, as head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, has been a fanatically strong supporter of the Netanyahu government in Israel and the Israeli occupation. He has attacked the United Nations, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, the International Court of Justice, the International Criminal Court, virtually anybody who dares document or investigate violations of human rights or international humanitarian law by the Israeli government. And most Democrats at this point are starting to be, though very pro-Israel, more on the J Street end of the Zionist spectrum, that is, those that strongly support Israel as a Jewish state, but opposed the occupation and settlements. But Menendez is allying with AIPAC and the Republicans, the right wing of the Zionist movement, and in a totally unapologetic way, which is way, way beyond to the right of average, Democratic public opinion in terms of the rank and file voters. But it's not just Israel. He supports the Moroccan occupation of Western Sahara. He is one of the few who's openly supported Trump's recognition of Morocco's annexation of the entire nation of Western Sahara, along with Israel's illegal annexation of the Golan Heights. And here's a guy who talks about, Russia cannot unilaterally change international borders. They cannot expand their territory by force, in reference to Ukraine. That's certainly true. But then he says it's okay if a U.S. ally does it. And he, just like his statements on human rights, criticizing them in Cuba and other left-leaning countries, but excusing them or even supporting them in terms of right-wing U.S. allies, his attitude on international law is the same way. It's a bad violations of international legal standards, the U.N. Charter. That's a horrible thing if a country we don't like Russia, does it. But if it's an ally like Israel and Morocco, it's okay. And this is not what most Americans, especially most Democrats, want. Again, if you look at the public opinion polls, a vast majority of Americans, particularly on the Democratic side, believe that international law should be enforced consistently. I mean, just as you would not want a Democratic attorney general to only prosecute Republicans or a Republican attorney general to only prosecute Democrats, same thing with international law. Law is the law. You can't pick and choose depending on the political or geostrategic orientation of the offender.
Right. Well, against that backdrop, I think the fact that Menendez, who, as we're recording on September 28th, has pled not guilty, we're still in medias res, but he says that the federal prosecutors are misrepresenting routine congressional work. And in the context of what you've just said, I feel like that should set off an alarm for an independent press corps, right? That he's even comfortable saying, well, this is just what you do when you're in a congressperson.
Yes, I mean, it is concerning that even without this apparent illegal activity, even without its rather brazen nature, the fact is that it is really a scandal that the United States continues to support repressive regimes like Egypt, like Bahrain, like Saudi Arabia, like United Arab Emirates, like Morocco. They continue to support the Israeli and Moroccan occupations. I mean, if you go down the list, there's probably no single issue in foreign or domestic policy where public opinion and U.S. policy is so widely differentiated. I mean, most Americans really do feel pretty strongly about human rights. And indeed, it's what we hear all the time. I mean, it drives me crazy that to hear and people in the mainstream media, without irony, talking about how Biden is standing up for human rights, standing up for international law, without mentioning that the United States arms 57% of the world's dictatorships, 57% of the world's authoritarian regimes receive U.S. military aid or arms sales. And this doesn't even count the countries that are nominally democracy, like Israel and India and others, which are also engaging in human rights abuses. So I think this scandal, on the one hand, shows the failure of the mainstream media to recognize the larger structural problem, but on the other hand, I think it provides an opening for those of us who do care about human rights, who would like to see U.S. foreign policy as actually more consistent with our stated values, to raise these issues and to challenge not just these corrupt politicians like Menendez, but the whole system that ends up supporting these autocrats and occupiers, and the kind of system that would put a man like Menendez in charge of our foreign policy in Congress, the Democrats' de facto foreign policy spokesperson, in that kind of position in the first place.
I'm going to end on that note. We've been speaking with Stephen Zunes, professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. His most recent book, co-authored with Jacob Mundy, is Western Sahara, War, Nationalism, and Conflict Irresolution, out now from Syracuse University Press. Stephen Zunes, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find shows and transcripts on our website, FAIR.org. The website is also the place to learn about FAIR's print newsletter Extra and our Action Alert Network. And it's also the place to show much-needed support for Counterspin and for the community-based stations that air our show, if you are able and so inclined. We appreciate it. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
WRCT, the in sound from way out.
And the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding...
Mom and Dad used to argue about everything, especially about Dad's drinking. My family went from totally crazy to quiet, calm, and even peaceful when Mom started going to Al-Anon family groups. I wanted a better relationship with Dad, so I asked Mom if she would take me to her Al-Anon meetings or to Alateen. I'm sure glad I did. If someone's drinking troubling you, you might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon or Alateen family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON or go to alanon.org.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh.
Of a heartbreak, lost love, loneliness, memories of your caress, so divine. I wish you were mine again, my dear. I'm on the sea of tears, sea of a heartbreak. Heartbreak, lost love, loneliness, memories of your caress, so divine. How I wish you were mine again, my dear. I'm on a sea of tears, sea of a heartbreak.
Watch the lightning when it lights up the sky. You know it makes me feel good. Well, I love a rainy night, such a beautiful sight. I love to feel rain on my face, taste the rain on my lips, in the moonlight shadows. Showers wash all my cares away. I wake up to a sunny day, 'cause I love a rainy night. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. Ooh, ooh. I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night. I love to hear the thunder, watch the lightning when it lights up the sky. You know it makes me feel good. Well, I love a rainy night, it's such a beautiful sight. I love to feel the rain on my face, taste the rain on my lips, in the moonlight shadows. Puts a song in this heart of mine, puts a smile on my face every time, 'cause I love a rainy night. Yeah, I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night.
Shadows wash all my cares away. I wake up to a sunny day, 'cause I love a rainy night. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night. Well, I love.
Beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a beat. Well, I did a double take the day I met you. My heart turned to flip as I stood next to you. And I knew right there I never could forget you. For you are my every dream come true. And my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a beat. You came in. Turn my cloudy skies from gray to blue. You're my sunshine that comes up every morning. Yes, you are my every dream come true. And my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a beat.
One fine day as I was walking down the street, spied a beggar man with rags upon his feet. Took a penny from my pocket in his tin cup, I did drop it, and I heard him say as I made my retreat,
"May the bird of paradise fly up your nose, may an elephant caress you with his toes, may your wife be flagged with runners in her hose, may the bird of paradise fly up your nose."
My laundry man is really on his toes. Found the $100 bill among my clothes. When he called me, I came running, gave him back his dime for phoning, and I heard him saying as I turned to go,
"May the bird of paradise fly up your nose. May an elephant caress you with his toes. May your wife be flagged with runners in her hose. May the bird of paradise fly up your nose."
I was way behind one day to catch a train. The taxi driver said, "We'll make it just the same."
I speak of Minnie Willis. And as he wrote out the ticket, I stood by politely waiting for my change.
Minnie Bird of Paradise, fly up your nose. Minnie Elephant, caress you with his toes. Minnie White, the plague with runners in her hose. Minnie Bird of Paradise, fly up your nose. Minnie Bird of Paradise, fly up your nose. Minnie Elephant, caress you with his toes. Minnie White, the plague with runners in her hose.
Pittsburgh, rolling down that eastern seaboard. I got my diesel wound up and she's running like I never before. There's a speed zone ahead with all right. I don't see a cop in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. I got me 10 forward gears on a Georgia overdrive. I'm taking little white pills and my eyes are open wide. I just passed a Jimmy in a white. I've been a-passing everything in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm a-gonna make it home tonight. But it seems like a month since I kissed my baby goodbye. I could have a lot of women, but I'm not like some of the guys. I could find one to hold me tight, but I could never make my livers all right. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. ICC is a checking on down the line. Well, I'm a little overweight and my logbook's way behind. But nothing bothers me tonight. I can dodge all the scales all right. 6 days on the road and I'm a-gonna make it home tonight. Well, my rig's a little old, but that don't mean she's slow. There's a flame from her stack and that smoke's a-blowing black as coal. My hometown's a-coming in sight. If you think I'm happy, you're right. 6 days on the road and I'm a-gonna make it home tonight. 6 days on the road and I'm a-gonna make it home tonight. 6 days on the road and I'm a-gonna make it home
down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what, I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too, and if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you. The boy said, my name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, you're gonna regret, cause I'm the best as ever been.
Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you'll get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul.
Up his case and he said, I'll start this show, and fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow, and he pulled the bow across the strings and it made an evil hiss, and then a band of demons joined in and it sounded something like this. devil finished, Johnny said, well, you're pretty good, old son. But sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, does your dog bite? No child, no. The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat. And he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best there's ever been. He played, found a mountain, run, boys, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. The chicken in the bread pan, I'm picking out dough. Granny, will you don't fight, no child, no.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. A woman done left and took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it. I've been working in this factory for now 15 years. All this time I watched my woman drowning in a pool of tears. And I've seen a lot of good folk die, had a lot of bills to pay. I'd give the shirt right off of my back if I had the guts to say, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. My woman done left and took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. Well, that phone. Got a brand new flat top haircut. Lord, thinks he's cool. One of these days I'm gonna blow my top, and that sucker, he's gonna pay. Lord, I can't wait to see their faces when I get the nerve to say, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. A woman done left and took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. Take this job and shove it.
DJs knows that I'm an outlaw. They'd never come to see me in this dive, where bikers stare at cowboys who are laughing at the hippies who are praying they'll get out of here alive. Loudmouth in the corner's getting to me, talking about my earrings and my hair. I guess he ain't read the signs that say I've been to prison. Someone ought to warn him before I knock him off his chair. Cause my long hair just can't cover up my redneck. I've won every fight I've ever fought, and I don't need some turkey telling me that I ain't the damn door.
Check it, Daddy Bob.
'Cause I can sing all them songs about Texas.
And I still do all the sad ones that I know.
They tell me I look like Merle Haggard and sound a lot like David Allen Coe. And the barmaid in the last town that we played in knew the words to every song I'd wrote. She said, Jimmy Rabbit turned her on to my last album just about the time the jukebox broke. Yeah, Johnny Cash helped me get out of prison long before Rodriguez stole that goat. I've been the Rhinestone Cowboy for so long I can't remember, and I can do you every song Hank Williams ever wrote. And I can sing all them songs about Texas.
And I still do all the sad ones that I know.
I can't help it, I look like Merle Haggard, and I sound a lot like David Allen Coe. But the country DJs all think I'm an outlaw, and they'd never come to see me in this dive where bikers stare at cowboys who are laughing at the hippies who are praying they'll get out of here alive. The loudmouth in the corner is getting to me, talking about my earrings and my...
I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Sleep in Detroit City, and I dreamed about those cotton fields and home. I dreamed about my mother, dear old papa, sister and brother. I dreamed about that girl who's been waiting for so long.
I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Oh, how I wanna go home.
Home folks think I'm big in Detroit City. From the letters that I write, they think I'm fine. But by day I make the cards, by night I make the bars. If only they could read between the lines. 'Cause you know, I rode a freight train north to Detroit City, and after all these years, I find that I've just been wasting my time. So I just think I'll take my foolish pride and put it on a southbound freight and ride. Go on back to the loved ones, the ones that I left waiting so far behind.
I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Oh, how I wanna go home.
road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again.
Hello, walls.
Hello.
How'd things go for you today? Don't you miss her? Since she up and walked away, and I'll bet you dread to spend another lonely night with me. Only walls, I'll keep you company. Hello, Wendell. Well, I see that you're still here. Aren't you lonely? Since our darling disappeared. Well, look here, is that a teardrop in the corner of your pain? Now don't you try to tell me that it's rain. She went away and left us all alone the way she planned. Guess we'll have to learn to get along without her if we can. Hello, ceiling.
Hello.
I'm gonna stare at you a while. You know I can't sleep. So won't you bear with me a while? We must all stick together, or else I'll lose my mind. I've got a feeling she'll be gone a long, long time.
You are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
You forgot to say who you are and with what band.
I know. Hello, this is Reza from Le Vent du Nord. You're listening to WRCP Pittsburgh.
Hello there, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Whiskey Before Breakfast and the Roots Program. I am Mando Richard, and you are sure going to enjoy today's show. We're going to open up with a Lick It Up set like we always do. We'll close down with a gospel set like we always do. This week, all four of the artists in the Lick It Up set will also be featured in the gospel set. And in a little while, we'll hear from Woody Snyder, and we've got lots of great music for you. Loretta Lynn passed away on October 4th of 2022. So let's start off our Lick It Up set with a classic from the late Loretta Lynn.
Well, you thought I'd be waiting up when you came home last night. You'd been out with all the boys and you ended up half tied. But liquor and love, they just don't mix. Leave the bottle or me behind.
Sent for him to come. How the old man used to smile and cause the family pain. He'd let up for a little while and then get drunk again. We'd give him up for gone. He's lying in the lane, and almost everybody knows the old man's drunk again. He'd take his morning nip and loaf about the door. He told his family more than once that he would drink no more.